Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on the road. Today, we have so much to cover, I'm going to do it in shorter segments. I'm going to, of course, open with the latest on health and healing, but then I want to do some commentaries, including Unfashionable Fascism by Professor Henry Giroux. Also, where it all began, that the dawn of fake news, probably where you didn't imagine, and that's by David McClary over at Counterpunch. And I want to continue with something I started yesterday. And this is because of one of our listeners who wrote in. And this is a person who said that they learned a lot. They actually learned about what it means to be different, to be a contrarian, to be someone who challenges authority. And we've been put down our whole lives for challenging authority. And this person said it was very important to hear what you had to say because it reinforced that maybe throughout my life when I was challenging authority, I was on the right side of an issue instead of always saying, well, you're the authority figure, you know best. And so continuing with the idea that if intuitively at your heart level you believe that what you're seeing, experiencing, want to do, but maybe are restricted from doing, let's add something on to that now, another piece to the puzzle. And this is the danger of absolute thinking. I'm going to share my own thoughts in a commentary I wrote last night, plus those of Eons Muhammad al-Masawi, on what it is to be absolutely clear. And I'll give examples from my own background, what it was like. Yesterday I mentioned when I was in college and I chose a university, one of the most difficult universities in America to get into and almost impossible to get out of, as the challenge that I needed. Well, it more than met my needs and exceeded those. Had it not been for one of the deans who called me one day and told me the truth about the biases that were inherent in the system, and he was so disgusted by the biases that he just wanted to let me know that I had one ticket that I could play against them, ask them questions they had to also respond to, because no one ever asked their faculty members questions. So in any case, otherwise, I might not have gotten out. And there is where those people had two things going on their side. Absolutism, completely closed-minded. Their life was seen as everything was right or wrong, black or white. And that represents a large number of people today. They're extremely dogmatic. It's an all-or-nothing mindset that they bring into this discussion. Well, I also saw that later when I was a young scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology, and then as I evolved to become a research fellow, it still did not make me any more acceptable to the people I've been working with for decades. They absolutely refused to accept that nutrition or health or belief or energy had anything to do with anything because they were purebred members of what is known as scientism. Scientism acts like a cult, and once you're in it, no matter what evidence you're presented with, you must reject that evidence, even when the evidence is so palpably reasonable, where common sense could tell you, friend, this makes sense. It doesn't matter. They'll go against it. So I'll give you that today. So I have another commentary I'm going to share with you today on that. And also, I have a guest in the second part of our program, and I brought this guest on for the very reason of what I'm discussing this week, that we must start to stand up and organize in intelligent and meaningful ways and to push back against authority and the authorities that control virtually every institution and paradigm in America. In fact, I dare say I do not know of a single paradigm they do not control. They control education, banking, the body politics, all houses. They control all the business communities. So today, Dr. Al Galvis, who is helping to lead a march this coming Sunday a march that I had participated in a couple years ago at the Javits Center against the American Psychiatric Association. So there is a good example, and I'll hold my thoughts until we're into that discussion about how it brings together scientism or science-based medicine, which is extremely dangerous. In fact, it is the single most dangerous thing that can happen in a person's life today. And I'll explain what I mean. Versus evidence-based medicine and evidence-based science, which allows, if homeopathy works, if Ayurvedic, if prayer works, if being close to nature works, incorporate it, as long as it can be proven, not just with what happens with you, but other people using the same model. And by the way, historically, your better minds, those that were more open and fluid and flexible, Maimonides and Socrates, they believed in vitalism. Well, these people hate the idea of vitalism. They don't believe there is anything after death. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in a higher being. They don't believe in consciousness that connects with other consciousness. They don't believe in any of this stuff. To them, it's all quackery, must be not just denied, it must be destroyed. They had the mindset, in my personal opinion, of the Grand Inquisitors in the 12th century. If you had anything that you were doing that represented a challenge to the church and the superstition the church was involved with, you were to be tortured, killed, and millions of people were tortured and killed and excommunicated for being heretics. Science is doing that same thing today. So we're going to touch on all this today. We have a lot to share. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing. And please remember, our program is heard all over the world, so I select the topics each day that represent something that no matter where you live on this planet, you can benefit from. First, from the University of Illinois, walnuts. Walnuts impact your gut microbiome, meaning the good bacteria in your gut, and that improves your overall health. But that's not just walnuts. A diet rich in raw nuts, pecans, almonds, pistachios, cashews, filberts, Brazil nuts, pine nuts, which are pignolias, and walnuts can play a major role in heart health and in reducing colorectal cancer. That's according to this new study at the University of Illinois. Now, specifically, the way that walnuts impact the gut microbiome, the collection of trillions of microbes or bacteria in the gastrointestinal tract, might be behind these health benefits. Now, walnuts are just one in a line of foods that contain dietary fibers, and they have interested scientists for their impact on the microbiome and health. And dietary fibers act as a food source for your gut microbiota, meaning they feed the fibers, feed the good bacteria in your gut, and they do their job, which in turn helps in the breaking down of complex foods and providing us with nutrients and helps us feel more full and are healthier. Now, your fruits and vegetables, whole grains and nuts and legumes. By the way, if you hear the word pulses, legumes, and beans, they're all pretty much the same. And they're important plant sources for fiber, but also amino acids. So eating a variety of these foods helps promote a diverse group of good bacteria in your body. And the findings were published in the peer-reviewed journal, the Journal of Nutrition. And it simply says that consuming walnuts impacts your gut microbiota and your microbiological derived secondary bile acids and can lower your LDL cholesterol, which is the bad cholesterol, and is good for your cardiometabolic and gastrointestinal health. Quote, we found that when you consume walnuts, it increases microbes that produce the bitrate, a beneficial metabolite for colonic health, so the interaction of walnuts with the microbiome is helping to produce some of these health benefits. Okay, it's that simple. Women who eat fast foods, that's most, take longer to become pregnant. This is from the University of Adelaide, which is in Australia. So women who don't like their fruits and vegetables, but do like their hamburgers and french fries, who don't like beans but love meat, well, you're going to take much more time to become pregnant, and you're going to have more problematic pregnancy. That's according to the latest research from the Robinson Research Institute at the university. And it's common sense. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Human Reproduction, which, by the way, is one of the world's leading reproductive medical journals. They looked at 5,598 women in Australia, New Zealand, and United Kingdom and Ireland about their diet. And the women who had not had a baby before then were monitored for their diet and found out those that consumed the most fast foods had the least fertility rates. But it goes beyond that. If you're having a problem being fertile and it's because of your diet, there's a high probability that if you do become pregnant, anything that you've done, alcohol consumption, sugar consumption, antibiotics, are going to weaken the developing fetus and make it far more susceptible to illnesses, brain conditions, miscarriage, stillbirth. So that's the danger that you play with that American diet or fast food diet anywhere. I've advocated fasting my entire adult life. There were several physicians when I began my career. Dr. Hank Newbold was one, and he was probably the most famous. There were a couple other came after him, but he really believed that fasting was extremely important. He wrote a book on it. But there was a group of natural hygienists, and one was from a Dr. Bernard in California. And he had a really neat place out there. He was a very, very nice man. And every time I'd go to California, I'd drive over to his place. He had some nice rolling countryside. I'm not the best proponent for the landscape of California. I think most of it looks like a sagebrush hill until you get to Northern California. Then it's the big trees, really spectacular. But for about 80% of California, it's just these tiny little dunes and a lot of plainness. You go into Utah, you go into some of the beautiful big rock formations. That's where they used to film the John Wayne Ford, the big Ford films about the Old West. She wore a yellow ribbon and Fort Apache and those. Well, those it's called Monument Valley, and I've driven through it. If you ever are out there, go through that. It takes about 4 hours. It's just spectacularly beautiful. I don't see that in California. Anyhow, people are there, have their own reasons. They enjoy the weather and enjoy being near the ocean, all of which are fine. But he had this little place, and he was a big advocate that 2 days a week he would fast. Now, he would go out and pick fresh fruits, and he would juice the fruits, and then he would drink that, and throughout the whole day, he would have fruit juices. He would also have some vegetable juices. He was big on celery and cucumber and beets. By the way, today, I couldn't improve on those. Those are still as good today as they were. Bernard Jensen was his name. In any case, Dr. Cox came after Newbold, and he called me. He says, "You wrote a book on fasting." I said, "Yes, I did." "And food combining?" "Yep." "I'd like to talk with you." I said, "Okay." He was a psychiatrist, and we had several conversations. And next thing you know, he came out a book on fasting. And it was a very popular book. Now, he advocated longer fasts. And I said, "You got to be very careful with a longer fast. A one-day fast when you're taking juices and a protein shake, that's fine. Because what about the people who are borderline diabetic, who don't know they're diabetic, who you could be putting them in a place where their blood sugar plummets too low?" So I suggested in subsequent printings that he advocate for more protein shakes throughout the day, even putting a tablespoon of almond butter or a tablespoon of walnut butter or sunflower seed butter, which is also good. In fact, pumpkin seed butter and almond butter and sesame butter, tahini, these are just ground up or pulverized sesame seeds, pumpkin seeds, and sunflower seeds. They're as good as any nut butter for you. In fact, in some cases, better. So in any case, he advocated that, and he had a very popular practice where people came from all over the United States to improve, get this, to improve their psychological behavior. He was a psychiatrist. And he found, and we had a discussion, and I was doing a symposium, and I brought together the finest holistic medical doctors in America. By the way, did anyone in this audience, this goes back a long time, anyone in this audience remember the symposium all day at the Waldorf Astoria that I held, where I brought together Linus Pauling and the Shute brothers from Canada on vitamin E, the expert on vitamin B6, on vitamin C, on the B complex. Now, these were people that not only used them, but were the keynote innovators. And in any case, he came to do a discussion also on fasting. Made a very important contribution that kind of broadened the whole movement so more people would get into the fasting, which was considered kind of too extreme by most people's notion. The people doing most of the fasting at the time were the natural hygienists, the people who believed in eating more raw food, high-fiber diets. And they look very good, by the way. I mean, these are the people who, no matter what their age, their whole body resonated greater health. And anyhow, just as an aside, up at that point, virtually all of the literature on vitamin E showed that it really didn't do much. And at this symposium, the Shute brothers showed us a slideshow, what would now be called a PowerPoint presentation, and they showed people with advanced gangrene, advanced heart disease, clogging of the arteries, where they had reversed their conditions, and the principal thing they did was not diet. It was vitamin E, but at very high doses. They started at 800 units and went up to 3,000 to 4,000 units. And I looked for anything else in the scientific literature. They had over 5,000 monograms. So they had treated over 30,000 patients successfully using high-dose vitamin E. No one else in the world was doing that. They were the only ones. But it was a very important lesson. Here is the lesson. Here's the takeaway lesson from this. It wouldn't be for another 15 to 20 years before someone decided, instead of using 15 units or 20 units of vitamin E, to go up to 400 units. In a moment they did, they got results. Now, others began to see this in the literature, and they started to start at 400, and they'd go up to 600, and they got even better results. So you saw over a period of time, it wasn't all at once, a graduating of the amount of vitamins that were being given as far as vitamin E. And now there are over 30,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature on the chemistry, safety, potency of vitamin E alone. So when someone says, well, there is no evidence, oh, yeah, there's a motherload. But they just haven't read it. And then if they say, well, the evidence shows that it doesn't, you look at the potency. I remember when the man who also was at my symposium, his name was Frederick Klenner, and he was down in Reidsville, North Carolina, and he was the first physician in the United States that I was aware of, or I could find, who used 50,000 units of vitamin C. And he had some really remarkable good results. And this was not one patient, this was thousands of patients over like 20 years. And I was thinking, okay, if he's getting these results, what is happening that we're not aware of? What are we missing? Now, this is where evidence-based science, and from that, evidence-based medicine works. But strict science-based medicine does not. It came about with goats. I had the Fertiller Farm up in New Paul, up near New Paul's Stone Ridge, where thousands of you came to take in some workshops on homesteading. And I had some goats. A person that had a goat dairy and it went broke, and rather than selling them for meat, I said, well, give them to me. I don't want to see any animal killed, and I kept them there until I could find a home for them. But one of the things I noticed over the next like 10 years, a goat never got sick, ever. with anything. They could eat poison ivy, and they could eat poison ivy, poison oak, poison sumac. They could eat anything. Never got sick. So I started doing a whole analysis on what was in the goat's blood. And what I found was, and this was later confirmed by Dr. Stone, that a goat produces about 20,000 milligrams of vitamin C per day. So if a goat weighing 15 pounds produces 20,000 milligrams, and they're on an unsprayed farm, no chemicals, eating lots of grass and clovers and wildflowers and fruits and vegetables, how much then would a 180-pound man or a 130-pound woman need, living in a polluted environment, under stress, not getting a good night's sleep, having a lot of highly acidic foods, including coffee, one of the most acidic of all, how much would they need? And then it just came to me one night. I remember this. I still remember this. This is one of those clarion moments for me. I'm sitting upstairs on the third floor of the Institute, and I said, let's just do the math. And it came up to about around 60,000 milligrams. And I'm thinking, we cannot produce vitamin C. We do not have that capacity. Just a few species can't produce vitamin C. They have to get it from their diet. But then I did an analysis over a two-week period. I got every textbook on nutrition there was, including the ones I studied in dietitian school and nutrition school. And they're telling you get all the vitamin C you need just from having some oranges. So I did an analysis. In an average ordinary, you're getting about 30 milligrams of vitamin C. So clearly we were suffering without even being aware of it. The entire medical community was unaware of this. The entire scientific community was unaware of it. We were a nation of subclinical deficiencies of vitamin C, meaning we didn't have scurvy, but we were above that, but below optimal levels to feed the immune system. It took me 2 years doing a series of studies to show that when we increased the amount of vitamin C in the diet, we increased our immune markers. We increased the activity of the, let's say, the natural killer cells, which are the cells. You don't increase their number, you increase their potency in the body to get at being stronger against cancer. And that's when I realized that we had a big gap in our knowledge, a piece that was missing. We were only looking, take away this. This is a very important message I'm going to share with you now. Please listen carefully what I'm saying. We do not recognize in the current scientific-based medicine protocols subclinical deficiencies of anything. We only recognize clinical symptoms. So once you see the tumor, we got it early. No, it took 30 years at the subclinical level growing, and only by the time you could measure it, when you could actually see it, palpate it, biopsy it, did you say it here, but it didn't start yesterday. That was all subclinical. When you see heart disease and you see the erosion of our arteries, decades, clogging of our arteries, decades, amyloid plaque being laid down in our brain, decades. So therefore, you can either treat the symptoms, which are the end stage of a disease process, but the energy that you're putting in, the effort you're putting into staying healthy, is far below what the disease has already manifested, meaning the disease is always ahead of your efforts of reducing it or reversing it. Therefore, I created a model that exceeded the disease. And I actually gave it merit points. In fact, I just did a whole lecture on this. But I filmed the lecture because I thought some of you might appreciate this information. I filmed it at our retreat. I flew in my camera crew. And I filmed 7 lectures, all brand new, completely original. I'm going to stream these as soon as my editors have time. We're working to finish this very important major film that I'm going to finish filming in the next couple weeks. And that's our big film for the summer. We have another film behind that for the late fall. But in this one, I show that your normal lifestyle, everything you do every day, the rituals of your existence, the tap water you drink, the beer you drink, the hamburger you eat, the cheese sandwich you eat, the chili you eat, all the things you consume, the work you do, your stress levels, how you deal with problems and issues in life, remarkable negative, remarkable positive moments, all of these things impact your telomeres and your susceptibility to your immune response. In effect, they determine how long you're going to live. We have a choice of impacting this. We can impact how quickly we're aging or how quickly we're dying. We can impact whether we develop symptoms or prevent symptoms if we know what to do. So I'm very detailed, and here's what you got to do in order to slow down the aging process and slow down disease, because this is all manifesting at the subclinical level. This is where energy medicine comes in, and that's completely taboo. That's completely that causes their brains to explode in these skeptics. Mention energy medicine, they lose their minds. Even though there's an enormous amount of science backing it up, epigenetics, 3,000 or 4,000 scientific articles in the peer-reviewed literature. They're not reading them, but they're still there. The fact that you want to deny someone else's reality does not exclude that other person from the truth of their own reality. And just remember this. Take this away with you. Write this down if you want. Because if you want to give a intelligent and sensible and reasoned response to people who are absolutists and closed-minded and reactionary, just share this thought with them. And I came up with this thought some years ago in a debate. The truth of a reality always precedes scientific verification. So to these skeptics, to these closed-minded, rigid individuals in the entire scientific community that abides by scientific-based medicine, which is more, in my opinion, of a cult, then you're saying that I cannot trust or believe in anything or anyone until you've first scientifically verified it by your standards and your beliefs. And your beliefs are subjective, and yet you say nothing subjective should be allowed in scientific-based medicine, and yet the entire field of scientific-based medicine is based on subjective opinions and beliefs. And by the way, just as to show you how right all the people fasting throughout history were, including the Essenes, the old tribe of Israel. From MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, fasting boosts stem cell regenerative capacity. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You mean that all the things that we have been doing through evidence-based research, fasting, we feel better, fasting, we control our metabolism, fasting, we control our blood pressure, fasting, we can control our weight? We've been right? You bet. Here's why. As people age, their intestinal stem cells begin to lose their ability to regenerate. Now, these stem cells are the source for all new intestinal cells. So this decline can make it more difficult to recover from gastrointestinal infections or other conditions that affect the intestine. Well, this age-related loss of stem cell function can be reversed by a 24-hour fast. I'll repeat that. The age-related loss of stem cell function can be reversed by a 24-hour fast. That's according to a new study from MIT biologists. And the researchers found that fasting dramatically improves stem cells' ability to regenerate in both aged and young mice. So, that's where we're at on that. Now, I'm going to segue, before we go to our guest, into this absolute thinking. And I'll start with a story. I was thinking one day, the universe does not ever share anything by half measure. Which means that if homeopathy works, which it does, there are over 2,000 studies proving it does, and I'll be doing that report next week. It'll be a continuation of our report challenging those within Wikipedia who believe that homeopathy is quackery. They believe all these other things are quackery. Chiropractic is quackery, and holistic medicine is quackery. And we're going to deconstruct each one of their arguments. And we're going to provide real quality evidence-based science to support it. But in any case, there were like 16 departments and people who headed different groups at the Institute. And I thought, okay, if homeopathy works, then the principles of the microstimulation and the energy transference has to work in everything else in the world. Meaning you can't have one truth that a tree talks to a tree. That we can prove now. That's proven. We can even prove how they try to help each other when one tree's diseased or has an infestation. The root systems of other trees will try to get to that tree's root system to stimulate it to help it in its hour of need. Now, this is not in question. This has been by the biologists and ethnobiologists have proven this. That means that if you take any single example of communication in nature, it means then every single thing in nature, every single thing on the planet is also communicating. It's just as communicating by vibrational levels in ways that we have yet to discover. Go back to the idea that truth precedes scientific verification. So now, so they were downstairs and they were doing, in one particular guy, he was doing these experiments where he would do radiation poisoning on a back, burn a skin of some rats, then put a piece of cellophane over it, but he put his chemical, the drugs he was trying to create, and then it put cellophane, then they would measure that every day for like 2 weeks to see was the scabbing occurring, were fibroblast cells rebinding the tissue, or was it staying burnt tissue? If it was burnt tissue, then that didn't work, and they would change their protocols. But in the process, at night, they would put an X mark on their cards, and that's the then the attendants would just take all those rats and put them in a tub and pull out the air and kill them. The idea was you didn't want these rats who were in pain to suffer. Okay. Well, I didn't do any of that. I didn't believe in any way, shape, or form harming animals. I'm anti-vivisectionist. So I would go downstairs and I would take the rats that had been marked but not killed yet, and they would frequently kill them in the morning. So I'd just take the card and I'd take the rat upstairs. So over a period of weeks, I had all these rats upstairs. So based upon the principles of similars, I began to superpotentize their body. I was giving them amounts of healing nutrients 100 times more than what they would ever consume. Also, I'd play soothing music because the science clearly shows that music impacts the brain and creates dopamine hits, which every time you hear something that you enjoy musically, your brain gets a dopamine hit. That's why we like continue listening to music. It inspires us. I also did energy work on them. There was no cages. They could run the whole entire floor. They had the best diet. They had a diet better than any human being. No water was given. Fresh made juices all throughout the day. I was doing all this. At the end of a year, I was able to do a paper, and I presented it at our meeting, showing that you could reverse the disease and aging process. And so one of the scientists there said, "Where'd you get your rats?" I said, "From downstairs." He said, "What do you mean downstairs? You didn't get any from me." I said, "Yes, I did. In fact, all the rats I got were yours. How'd you get my rats?" I said, "Well, if you had marked the card that they were going to be killed, I just took them upstairs." He said, "This is all nonsense. It's not possible." I said, "Why?" And he's sitting at a whole table with other scientists. And he said, "Because they would have all died of radiation poisoning." And everybody was kind of looking down at their table at that point. And I said, "Sir," I said, "are you telling me that because you couldn't heal a wound that no one could heal the wound?" He said, "That's correct. Especially not someone dealing in nutrition," as if somehow that any emphasized nutrition as if that was something that we should be embarrassed by. And I said, "Well, that's what I did." I said, "I didn't even think anything about healing the wound. That was just kind of easy." And that blew him up. Man, when I said that was kind of easy, his head exploded. He went on a rant and pounded the table. So it was decided that my results were unqualified. But then the director said, "Gary, do it again. This time we'll monitor it. I said, okay. And I did it again, and I did the same results again. I had rats living longer than a normal rat would live. Normal rat. With no experiment on them. Just a normal rat fed, normal rat chow, and my rats live longer. And every one of these rats have been harmed by radiation. So guess what they did with this information? A, they had to acknowledge that it was real, but B, they would not allow me to publish the results. And that happened about 100 times. 100 times. Till finally, a woman who's still alive, I'm going to bring her on the air. Her name is Elena. She observed this and she says, these are just angry old men. She said, just bypass them. Just go out and publish your results. So after that, that's what I began to do. That's how I got my results published on finding that no animal, we don't need any animal proteins at all ever in our diet in order to be vitally healthy. In fact, when we're on a healthy plant-based diet, we live longer. Well, all these rats were on a strictly vegan plant-based diet. But in any case, this brings me to the larger message was that even when the truth was shared with people who believe in the absolute thinking of scientism, and scientism, in my opinion, is a cult, and virtually all of medicine today is scientism, virtually all of science today, with rare exception, the independence, yes, is scientism, meaning you start off bounding yourself up, like wrap yourself in duct tape, like a mummy, to only your eyes and mouth are visible, and then say you're going to go run a race. They deal with what cannot be done, and they immediately exclude anything that they are biased by from being a part of any of their efforts. So if you said, doctor, wouldn't it make sense if I tried improving my diet to overcome depression? Has nothing to do with it. You got to take this SSRI drug. Doctor, do you think that my mood has something to do with the fact that I'm a sugarholic and I'm drinking 8 cups of coffee a day and I'm wired with caffeine and I can't sleep? No. Take Paxil, Prozac. That's scientism at its worst. Evidence-based medicine say, well, let's take a look. Let's put you on a good diet and get rid of the sugar. Let's get you your nutrient levels up and see the results. Evidence-based medicine is good. Scientific medicine is just the antithesis. So according to Muhammad al-Musawi, think of the most happy and well-adjusted person you know. What can you say about their thinking style? For example, are they dogmatic with an all-or-nothing outlook on the world? Do they place total rigidity and demands on themselves and those around them? When confronted with stresses and misfortunes, are they apt to magnify and fixate on them? In short, do they have an absolutist thinking style? Well, absolutism refers to ideas and phrases and words that denote totality, either in magnitude or probability. And absolutist thoughts are unqualified by nuance and overlook the complexity of a given subject. They take out of the equation a person's values, a person's beliefs, a person's history, the epigeneticism of their life, the day-to-day existences that can compound or alleviate a problem. None of this is important to them. There are generally two forms of absolutism, the dichotomous thinking and the categorical imperatives. And dichotomous thinking, also referred as black and white or all or nothing thinking, describes a binary outlook where things in life are either this or that, nothing in between. And categorical imperatives are completely rigid demands that people place on themselves and others. And the term is borrowed from Immanuel Kant's moral philosophy, which is grounded in the obligation and rules-based ethical code, which means that if someone tells you to do something, you must do it 100% or not do it at all, and they believe 100% in what they're thinking, and there's no room for equivocation, and you are not important. Following their rules is all that's important. Your outcome is irrelevant. the outcome of their belief is all, in you honoring is all that's important. And hence, take a look at medical schools and their medical curriculum. How do you get through medical schools? You do not challenge the medical ethic or the paradigm. You do not challenge the pharmaceutical model. You do not challenge what you're taught in medical school. You must subscribe to the notion that everything you're taught is science, and anything beyond that, you're in deep water. And you try to challenge them, you will fail. So think of what would happen if Einstein were to have gone into medicine or psychology. And think of all the other great thinkers. Think if Gandhi had gone to the Milton Friedman School of Economics, University of Chicago. Do you think he would have been a believer in trickle-down theory? No, not at all. So you see, it's important to understand that if you feel that you do not fit in, there might be a good reason for it, because you do not at the constitutional as well as the intuitive level want to be compromised by other people's moral imperative and self-righteous indignation that everything must be done their way or the highway. And that's the society we live in today. That said, we're going to go out now and say hello to our guest who is standing by. Want to welcome him to our program, Dr. Alice Galvez, G-A-L-V-E-S. He's in New Mexico. And we're going to talk about the failures and health risks of biopsychiatric view of mental disorders. Nice to have you with us today.
Yeah, good being here, Gary.
And by the way, he is also the author. He is a graduate from Cornell University and University of Pennsylvania. He's the author of Harness Your Dark Side, Mastering Jealousy, Rage, Frustration, and Other Negative Emotions. His website is algalves.com. Due to the success of the biological model of mental health and its advocates in the skeptic movement, more and more Americans are accepting that false claim that mental disorders are due to either genetics, biomolecular and chemical imbalances in the brain or body, and yet it is solely an extreme reductionist view, and therefore, if the mental illness is strictly due to material or physical causes, then the proper treatment, the argument goes, would be prescribing other chemicals or drugs, so all of which are known to be toxic and have serious adverse effects. And back in 2014, 10,500 people died from heroin overdose, a drug that is illegal. Yet, 15,700 died from legally prescribed psychiatric medications. Nearly 50% more died. And a paradigm of thought or science only becomes dominant after enough people believe in it and support it. And aside from the health risks caused by psychoactive drugs, why is the determinist and materialistic view of biopsychiatry so dangerous? My opinion, I'll stand by it, I'll defend it. And if you want to challenge me on it, we'll have that debate right now. But I believe that biopsychiatry is a danger to all that engage in it. Your thoughts, please.
Oh, I agree with that. Absolutely, I agree with that. The problem is that, see, psychiatry decided to become a laboratory science about 50 years ago. And when they did that, they turned their back on human beings. They ignored human nature, because what human beings care about is loving the way they want to love, being connected with other people in satisfying ways, and using their faculties, you know, using their abilities in satisfying ways, expressing themselves, and experiencing achievement, mastery, and competence. And you can't study that in a laboratory. You can't study that on a brain scan or with a blood test or anything like that. So basically, psychiatry just gave up on human beings 50 years ago. And so, you know, the idea that that mental illness is caused by biochemistry, chemical imbalances, genetics, and brain disorders, it's a very cynical idea, because what it means is that human beings don't have any control over their minds or their emotions, that they don't have control over the things they use to live their lives. That's what the logical conclusion of that belief is. And, of course, that's extremely cynical, and it's erroneous. Basically, people become mentally ill when their lives are not going well. when they're not able to love and work the way they want to love, love and express themselves the way they want to do that, they become mentally ill. So mental illness has to do, mental illnesses are reactions to people's lives and life situations and the concerns they have about themselves and their lives. And so basically good treatment helps people learn how to live their lives the way they want to live them, to use their minds and their emotions, their intentions, their perceptions, their reactions, to be able to love, be connected to other people, use their abilities. And that's what good treatment is. Well, you can't help people do that with drugs. Taking a pill is not going to help people be able to do that. It won't help them live their lives the way they want to live them. So it gets worse than that, Gary, and you know about this. There's going to be a protest on Sunday at the American Psychiatric Association in New York. The protest is from 1 to 3 p.m. Between 37th Street and 38th Street, between 36th Street and 37th Street, West 36th and West 37th on 11th Avenue. The APA, the American Psychiatric Association, is having their annual convention at the Javits Center. So the protest is basically by human rights advocates. And the reason they're protesting is because psychiatry can force people into treatment. They can force people to be treated against their will. Now, of course, forced treatment doesn't work. I mean, it's an oxymoron. If people are forced into treatment, it's very unlikely that they're going to benefit from the treatment. They're going to be fighting it. But the worst thing about that is the treatment they're going to receive is horrible, because what it's going to consist of is drugs. And people who are going through hard times are going to be told that they have a brain disorder, they're going to have it for the rest of their lives, and they need to take these drugs. Well, the drugs aren't going to help them very much. The drugs are going to knock down symptoms. The drugs are going to dumb them down. They're going to take away dopamine. You were just mentioning that dopamine is how people listen to music and get healed by music, excited, energized by music. Well, these psychotropic drugs that people take, the antipsychotics, they reduce dopamine in the brain. That's what they do. So what's going to happen, and these people who they've fallen into a state of being that actually is a way of protecting themselves and avoiding pain and feeling more adequate and being able to survive in the world. That's what's happening. That's what psychosis is. It's a move by a wounded psyche to heal itself. That's what psychosis is. Well, they go, they get caught up in the medical system, and they're given these drugs. Now, the drugs, as I just said, they just dumb them down. They take away, they just deal with the symptoms. But worse than that, the antipsychotic drugs cause Parkinson's disease. They cause something called tardive dyskinesia, which is basically Parkinson's. And if you take these drugs for more than a year, for two or three more years, you're going to start coming down with Parkinson's disease. That's not a surprise, because Parkinson's is thought to be caused by a deficiency of dopamine. And these drugs are taking dopamine away from the brain. So one of the treatments for Parkinson's is L-DOPA, which is synthetic dopamine. So it's not surprising that if you take these drugs, you're going to come down with Parkinson's disease. You'll also suffer cognitive impairment, because your brain is going to be shrinking. These drugs shrink the brain. They also increase the risk of diabetes, and they cause early death. So there's evidence that people who take these drugs die 25 years younger than other people. And the more of these drugs they take, the earlier they die. So the reason people are protesting this is that this is a horrible violation of people's human rights, to force them into that kind of treatment, to stop the healing process they're in. I mean, that's a horrible violation. So that's why these organizations, Mind Freedom International, the OBAL Project, the Network Against Psychiatric Assault, the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights, and the Icarus Project have joined to put together this protest this coming Sunday from 1 to 3. And people
will follow it.
Go ahead, Gary.
No, I just want people in the audience, especially those who joined me. We had about 300 people join me 2 years ago when I was down there. Please show up. I can't be there because I'm on the road filming, but please show your support for those who are in that juggernaut and can't get out. It's like a gulag. Separate to you, though, what do you believe accounts for the growing popularity of the biopsychiatric model for treating mental disorders? And is it solely the success of big pharma lobbyists in Washington and pharmaceutical profits and psychiatry having hijacked professional medical publications? And in what ways have the advocates for biopsychiatry and the scientism promoted by the American Psychiatric Association in general been successful, whereas non-drug-based therapies, the ones you're advocating, including psychotherapy and cognitive behavioral therapy and mind-body and meditation modalities and others, have been falling behind and not getting any credit?
Yeah, well, I think it's the cult of science, and you've been talking about that. It's the cult of science, the belief that science is going to solve all our problems. Wow, this is amazing. Now we do transplants and we cured polio and now we have these great psychiatric drugs that are going to cure mental illness. Well, it's this cult of science. But as you've been pointing out, and as I've said, you're just not going to be able to help people live their lives in satisfying, enjoyable, and healthy ways through laboratory science or positive science, because you can't study those things, you can't learn about those things through brain scans or blood tests or any laboratory things. So it's a cult of science. Part of it is the belief in professionals. You know, they must be right. They're professionals. You know, credentialism, that kind of thing. Part of it, Gary, is this idea that if I believe that mental illnesses are caused by biochemistry and brain disorders and genetics, then I'm not to blame. You know, I'm not to blame for the mental illness, or my family isn't to blame. But of course, that's ridiculous. No one's to blame for anything. We don't choose our parents. We don't choose our early lives. And our parents, you know, our early lives, the experiences we have in our early lives have a tremendous impact on our lives. We don't choose those. So we're not to blame for anything. If I'm having trouble, for instance, I was severely depressed at age 25, severely depressed. That was a long time ago. It was 1965, so it was before the drugs. And I was lucky. I went into psychoanalysis, and I started getting better after 3 hours of lying on the couch and saying everything that came to my mind. I started getting better because I exposed the truth about myself, and I became more comfortable with myself. So, part of it is this idea. Yeah, well, you know, if I believe that it's biochemistry and genetics, then I'm not to blame for it. Well, that's ridiculous. No one's to blame for any mental illness. I think that's a lot of it. It has to do with the cult of science. Of course, the drug companies have glommed onto this.
You know, big time.
Oh, they glommed on, man, incredibly. You know, the biggest advocacy organization for mentally ill people, as you know, Gary, in the United States, is the National Alliance for Mentally Ill, NAMI.
Yeah, now, purely NAMI sponsored by the pharmaceutical industry.
Oh, yeah, $50, $60 million a year to NAMI
from the
drug companies.
Go
ahead.
Excuse me, but we're coming up near the end of the program, and I want to tie two things together. This week I began a series of challenges to scientism and science-based medicine and Wikipedia, that is the largest single forum where people get information on a topic So for example, if they want to know, is there benefits to something that you do as a psychologist practicing out in La Cruz? Is it Cruces, New Mexico, C-R-U-C-E-S?
Las Cruces,
New Mexico. Well, they could Google that, and Wikipedia would give them the information. But if the people behind the scenes at Wikipedia who are pragmatists and don't like what you do, don't believe in what you do, because it's not reductionistic, it's too subjective, humanistic psychology, the ability to talk to someone as a human being and look at all the different dynamics in their lives that might have caused their stress, they want that pharmaceutical model, which in and of itself is not scientific, because they have no scientific evidence that they've been able to cure the first person with anxiety or depression. But be that as it may, I did a series. The first two, part one and part two, are now up on my website, and I'd like you to take a look at them and get them to members in your group, because I'm then going to do a documentary. I am doing a documentary now. I've been doing it called I've changed the title twice. I'll get to it. It's on psychiatry. But the abuse is within psychiatry. And the part one and part two is about Wikipedia, the new internet McCarthyism, where anyone doing important good work will now be condemned and harassed, and their reputations destroyed. So part one and part two, I've asked the audience, please go there and look at this and read them. I've got two articles and I have two radio broadcasts, and start to share them with people, because the way that you get your word out is through forums like these and others that are progressive, that want to know the truth and are not afraid of it. So if people go to PRN, that's PRN.fm, you will then see the home page at the top. It just says home. Click on home, and there you will see the articles. You can go to the archives and download these. And Stephen Barrett, Medical McCarthyism, A Legal Letter to Wikipedia Requesting Removal of the False Gary Null Bio, a Special Investigations on Abuses in the Mental Health Field, and all the other special investigations we're doing. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have someone at your demonstration on Sunday filming it, and I'll put that clip up there. So you and others who are there demonstrating, and the leaders in the field who are opposing orthodox psychiatry and scientism, will at least have a forum where you can get your message out.
Well, that sounds okay. Good. And it's PRN.FM?
We're the number one progressive radio station in the world, number one radio program in the world on progressive issues. But now we're starting to push back. We're asking people with the power of truth on our side and top documentaries, top investigative reporting articles, share them. The key is read them and share them. Do you know within an hour after I mentioned it yesterday, 5,200 people from this audience had downloaded the articles already? That's just in like 10 minutes. So we want to get your message out, the chiropractor's message out, the homeopath, and osteopath, the naturopath, the holistic doctors, the holistic nurse, the holistic dentist. And we can only do it if we're organized, if we have our evidence, and if our evidence is evidence-based from peer-reviewed literature showing that what we do, what we advocate, is really good. What they're doing, what they're advocating with science-based medicine, is highly politicized. They've captured the media. They've captured the institutions of government. They've captured the foundations. They've captured almost all eyes on their pages and very few anywhere else. But the American public is not stupid. It's not being deceived. More people are doing yoga and meditation and doing things that are positive, with positive visualization and really good meditative practices and eating healthier diets. So at least 60% of the American public is aware that there are other options, and maybe they should look at these other options also. So yeah. I'll have someone there on Sunday. We'll film you. We'll get your information up, and then I'll see about interviewing, filming you and some of the other people you advocate for my upcoming film. The working title, and it's changed twice, is Manufacturing Madness.
Uh-huh. That sounds good,
okay.
Gary. Let me tell the audience one other thing. If people want to follow this online, they can go to protestapa.com.
Okay, good.
Protestapa.com. And I just want to say one other word. I think scientism is the problem. Scientism is the
problem.
It is. An exaggerated trust an exaggerated trust that the methods of laboratory science or positive science can explain social and psychological phenomena, can address important human issues, and can give us a picture, a unified, comprehensive picture of the meaning of the cosmos. They can't do it. Science cannot do those things.
You're right. You're right. And, but we're out of time, and we can't run into the next show. So thank you very much, Dr. Al Gavis. Look forward to filming you in the near future. Please, everyone, go and download the articles. Download the files from the last couple of days and share them with people. Educate yourself so we can become proactive in a positive way. Have a nice day, everyone.